Welcome to Tackling the NFL, the only NFL podcast that is just thinking ahead on a whole nother level and thinks that it's a great idea to hire a defensive head coach to mentor your young quarterback. I'm Josh Rosenberg. That's Adam Baltax. And yes, I'm referring to the Bears hiring Matt Eberflus, the Indianapolis Colts defensive coordinator, in spite of their desperate need to develop Justin Fields into a franchise quarterback. But that's not really what this episode's about. I don't even think we're going to get to Sean Payton retiring, which is really going to shake the NFL. This episode is all about the playoffs because we just got through one of the craziest weekends of play, I think probably in playoff history. We had four games end on a game-winning play, and we've got two great games coming up ahead of us.
Yeah, it was a crazy weekend. I would go as far to say the craziest weekend in NFL history, without a doubt, in terms of literally not one bad game or not one like the closest game was 6 points, and that was the greatest game in NFL history. So it was a wild weekend. I'm very excited to get into this. Where do you want to start?
I think we should just go in order, and we will hit, as you mentioned, what I think we both say is the greatest game in NFL history. Obviously some recency bias included in that statement.
Right. We've only been alive for a very small portion of the NFL history.
That's true too. We'll hit that one last, and then we'll preview the championship games. So let's just start with Bengals-Titans, which was still a close game, but I would say the slowest out of the four this weekend. I mean, I guess a Packers-49ers.
Second slowest.
Yeah, I remembered that the 49ers won without scoring an offensive touchdown and realized I had to retract that statement.
Yep.
But where do you want to start with the Bengals-Titans?
I was definitely rooting for the Titans in this game because of the Julio Jones story, that whole thing. But at the same time, the Bengals are such a fun team to watch, like with all this youth, and they're going to be so good for so long that this was really a battle of a team on the up and a team on the down. At least that's what it looks like, because Ryan Tannehill is a good quarterback. Do you think that he is a Super Bowl contending quarterback?
I think he's a Super Bowl contending quarterback on the right team on the right day, in the same way that Joe Flacco could be. I really think that, like, every so often you hit on one of those.
You gotta bring Joe Flacco into it.
Always. I mean, you always have to. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can look at the Super Bowl champions of the last 10, 15 years, and every single one of them has been someone who's carried their team to the Super Bowl for most of the season. And Joe Flacco is not someone who did that.
Nick Foles did that, yeah.
I mean, he had, like, what's crazy is that Nick Foles isn't obviously an incredible quarterback, but he had an unbelievable postseason run. So
yeah,
it's hard to, like, put him in that tier. I guess you could say, like, Jimmy G in, I think, 2019 is sort of comparable, although obviously they didn't win the Super Bowl in large part because he wasn't that good.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting was that to take Ryan Tannehill to the Super Bowl, you need every single other part of your team and the play action run game that he's so dependent on for his success to be clicking and running on all cylinders. And that just wasn't happening. I mean, it was obviously Derrick Henry's first game back from injury, but he looked really rusty. And yeah, I just don't know why they went with him for so long, because Deonta Foreman looked way more explosive than him. There was a one play in particular, I think it was a 4th-and-1, where they just handed it off to Henry and wanted him to get a yard up the middle. And he just hesitated a little bit too long in the backfield. He didn't hit the hole, and he got swallowed up for a loss. And that was the end of the drive. And I think that Derrick Henry, who's not dealing with a massive foot injury, probably would have gotten that yard.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Derrick Henry did not look like Derrick Henry in that game. I think that's obviously a lot to ask for him. And the thing we've constantly, like, engraved in our podcast is that running backs are replaceable. And we're not, I'm obviously not saying that Derrick Henry's like a replaceable running back, because he's like the biggest running back in the NFL. But Deonta Foreman is a capable running back. He had 4 carries in the game, which is ridiculous. The fact that it took them that long to get him involved and only gave him 4 carries is stupid. But Derrick Henry had 20 carries and had less yards than Deonta Foreman had on 4 carries. So
yeah,
I think it's pretty clear that he was not the same Derrick Henry. And I think the Bengals realized that. I think every NFL fan realized that. I think even the Titans coach probably realized that just a little too late.
I don't want to take away from what the Bengals did do in this game, especially defensively. Offensively, oh, for sure, different story. But defensively, the Bengals were really ready for the Titans play action game. And it's obviously really easy to say that. I mean, like, we all know what the Titans want to do. Everyone knows what they want to do. They want, you know, run it with Derrick Henry, hit crossers over the middle to AJ Brown. It's very easy to say that. It's significantly harder to stop it. And that very first play of the game, that Jesse Bates interception, was exactly what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And he was ready exactly for that play. He came down, made a really tough play on the ball, and put the Bengals in a great position. So
yeah, like, Jesse, you got to give Jesse Bates
a ton of credit.
Jesse Bates might have been the only person in that stadium that thought that the Titans were going to throw that ball. So right. You got to give him a ton of credit. We've said it, one of the most underrated players in the NFL. Obviously, not quite having the same year he had last year, but he's coming back in the playoffs in a big way.
I think we're seeing a few players like that. There's another one who we're going to get to later who I think is doing something similar. But let's just hit the other side of the ball quickly. Right? It's so crazy to me that he's on the field, dude.
He's got to be net negative. Like, it's got to be better to play 10 players.
I just can't believe he's out there. It doesn't make any sense. If I was out of football for 2 full years, I don't know how much you would need to pay me to get back in there for a postseason like level of competition.
Hey, if they win another game, then he's got himself a Super Bowl. Like, and it's something worth fighting for. But at the same time, I'll fight for it from the bench. I'll happily not.
That's what I'm saying. I'm pulling in Antonio Brown, which, for the record, Antonio Brown was right about that. But this, I'm refusing to get off that bench, and I'm staying there if I'm Eric Weddle.
Oh, for sure.
But the other side of the ball is actually, again, where the defense won, I would say. Obviously, the Bengals ended up winning this game, but the Titans' defense just destroyed the Bengals' offensive line, especially the right side. And this was in large part due to just an incredible effort by Jeffrey Simmons and the rest of that group, and DeMeco Autry and the rest of them. But at the same time, a lot of that's on the Bengals. Like, Zach Taylor kept the Bengals in 5-man protections for most of the game, way too long, when it clearly wasn't working. When you have a right side that cannot stop those guys, Joe Burrow was holding onto the ball for a little bit too long. Like, that was just a failure, I think, on the Bengals' offensive coaching staff.
Yeah, I just don't see any way that you can let the Titans get 8 sacks on you. Like, that,
I think it was
that
9.
Should not be acceptable. 9 sacks, even worse. Our main concern about the Titans heading into this year was their pass rush and their pressure on the quarterback. And obviously, they did some things to go after that position, that weakness. But at the same time, if you're the Bengals, you know what's coming. The Titans want to get to Joe Burrow, Joe Shiesty, Joe Burr. But at the same time, like, it's a simple solution, and I think that's a little bit more protection. And we've seen what Joe Burrow can do with time, and he just wasn't getting.
Yep. I mean, he did have this. Like, I would definitely say that some of the sacks this weekend were on Joe Burrow. You could say multiple.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
He had the second shortest time to throw out of all the quarterbacks who played this past weekend. It wasn't like he was holding onto the ball forever, maybe trying to extend a play that wasn't there. There was just nothing going. Like, he didn't have a chance. And obviously, Evan McPherson bailed them out. That's great. But this effort is not going to cut it against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. So we'll get to that game in a little bit. But I think we should probably move on to the next game of the weekend.
Yeah, let's go to the second most boring game. Or let's say none of these are boring. But let's go with, like, the lowest scoring game of the weekend.
So Packers 49ers, where Aaron Rodgers was just canceled by DeMeco Ryans and the 49ers defense. In what was one of the most impressive performances of the year.
Easily.
Plenty of blame and credit to go around. But let's just start with Aaron Rodgers. Adam, I have a quick question for you, because everyone knows that Aaron Rodgers had no interest in throwing to anyone other than Aaron Jones or Davante Adams in this past game. They each had, I think, around 10 targets. But can you tell me, and the answer is no, you can't, who had the third most targets in this game?
I'm assuming it's not Alan Lazard, then, if you're telling me that.
It's not. Guess. It's someone who I'd never heard of until I was looking at the box score.
I think I know who it is, only because I think I saw this too. But you can go ahead and say it as if I wouldn't know.
In a surprise to everyone, the Packers' third highest target share went to Dominique Daphne, their backup tight end, I guess.
It's a very Packers thing to happen. It's like when Richard Rodgers first came out, and he came out of literally like thin air. This is what's happening with Dominique Daphne in that game, at least.
except for that, he had two targets and didn't catch either of them. So he had the third most targets with two.
He averaged 17 yards per catch during the season with two catches.
Well, they should have been thrown to him more, I guess. It wasn't working.
Yeah.
Missing Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Robert Tonyan definitely hurt the Packers' offense. But you just have to expect Aaron Rodgers, who's going to win probably back-to-back MVPs, to have a quarterback rating over 20 in a must-win game. Like, you just have to get more out of Rodgers. And so obviously there's plenty of other things we could talk about, but I think it all comes down to that.
It's a really, and it sucks because I think at this point, everyone's rooting for Aaron Rodgers. No one likes to see a guy go out in the playoffs that often.
I'm rooting against him. I am praying on his downfall every single day.
Okay. Well, you're speaking for yourself. I love Aaron Rodgers and what he did for off of the field thing with Jeopardy and helping people out. But
that was not where I thought you were going when you said the off of the field. That's not what people generally associate Aaron Rodgers with off of the field at this point.
I couldn't remember the guy who was Alex Trebek and his family and how much he helped out with that whole situation. And also, Aaron Rodgers has deserves to have won so many more playoff games, has deserved to be in a lot more Super Bowls, and has kind of been screwed out of them. This one, I'll say, is his fault. This one, you got to put up more than 10 points if you want to complain about your defense. And you can't do that this time. It was an attempt, but ultimately you got shut down by Kyle Shanahan's masterclass.
Yeah, and not just Kyle Shanahan, because honestly, I don't think we learned anything about the 49ers on offense in this game. They didn't score an offensive touchdown, obviously. All the credit, pretty much 99% of the credit, goes to DeMeco Ryans and his defense today, which was nasty, just unbelievably good. And it's crazy because DeMeco Ryans has built one of the best defenses in the league with Ambry Thomas and Emmanuel Mosley as his two starting cornerbacks, which is crazy. Like, we talked about this coming into the season. Wow, like, great players at the first and second levels of the 49ers defense, but who is going to cover? And they basically just figured out, fine, we can't play man. Like, we just absolutely cannot. We do not have the guys for this. So we're just going to spot drop zone. We're going to have Fred Warner shut down the entire middle of the field. And we're just going to let Nick Bosa, Arik Armstead, and then other guys who have really stepped up, like DJ Jones and Arden Key, just get after the quarterback. And it's worked so, so well.
Yeah, it was so much fun to watch. And so, okay, it wasn't fun to watch, but it was fun to watch. Like, if you're a football fan, like a real, real, like both sides of the ball football fan, this was a really fun game to watch because the schemes were insane. I don't think I saw the 49ers play the same scheme like more than three times that game. They were all over the place. The Packers had no idea what to do, completely like out there blind. Aaron Rodgers is like, oh God, what's happening? Let me just give it to Jones or Adams. And that type of defense will be extremely effective, but I'm sorry, you got to get a little bit more offensive production if you want to win two more playoff games.
Yeah. I mean, can't give DeMeco Ryans enough credit. Some of those pressures that he dialed up late in the game against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and then got home with them. Just the absolute audacity to do that is incredible. But you're right. I mean, the 49ers live off of their run game, and they averaged like almost a negligible amount of yards. Deebo Samuel, who led the league in rushing yards per attempt this season, averaged 3.9 yards per rush. He did get the decisive first down when they called a trap play, just a basic trap run play on 3rd and 7. That was a huge, huge play. But otherwise, they couldn't get it done on the ground. And you have to give some credit to the Packers defense, but it's a miracle that they got out of this game with a win.
Yeah, I think the only answer here is to start Trey Lance. And that's it.
Here's the thing. They should have. They're too far gone. They've committed to this, and they're going to ride out Jimmy Garoppolo, but they should have just stuck with Trey Lance, because if Jimmy Garoppolo isn't going to do it over the middle of the field, like basically the only thing he can do, if he's not going to get you like his basic like 20 for 25 with like just slants all day to Deebo Samuel, why are you not starting Trey Lance and just running like zone read all the time and just making defenses like even more hell in the run game? I just don't understand that. And
if you're like 49ers staff that have been here for a couple of years, this has to look familiar to you. This is the exact same team that made it to the final and then lost to the Chiefs. They have like even less offense than they had that year. And Jimmy Garoppolo looks bad. Like, it's not even that he looks like mediocre to like like even compatible with the rest of the team, but he looks lost out there. He had 11 completions in that long of a game, which is crazy. There were in so many third down situations that you would assume that he had at least 15, 20. So it was a problem. His highest receiver was George Kittle, 63 yards. He only passed to four guys. One of them was Jawan Jennings with one catch. If you're the Rams, you got to be licking your lips right now, because this is pretty much the ideal scenario for you, because you have such a strong defense going up against such a weak offense that we might see a pretty similar game this weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting because we think about there's been such an influx of young coaches that have taken over the NFL, like young offensive gurus who lead like really innovative offenses. We're going to see two of them this weekend in Sean McVay against Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, a lot of them came out of that like 2013 Washington football team staff or whatever. You see all those posts.
Hear that one more time, I'm going to throw my phone.
Well, anyways, it's interesting because so many of those guys are actually really fundamentally conservative when it comes to like in-game management and basically taking risks on the field. So you'll see them pass and fourth down opportunities that they should be going for a lot more than someone like Andy Reid, who's been around the game for a lot longer than them. And I think part of that, you see a little bit of that conservatism in Kyle Shanahan's refusal to start Trey Lance. So this is something we'll need to deal with next season. And I think we can move on to the next game, but it would be a very, very different preview of this next game and breakdown of this last game if they had been starting Trey Lance.
Oh, for sure. I do think that like, Even with Trey Lance, I'm not saying Trey Lance is a great quarterback. We've seen him this year. He's not great. He's obviously young. He makes a lot of stupid mistakes. He has one deep pass every game that saves the stat line. But it's better than Jimmy G because he just does not have that arm strength. He does not have that pocket presence. It's a problem. And the 49ers are not going to put up like multiple touchdowns with Jimmy Garoppolo at the helm, especially against a strong Los Angeles Rams defense. So it'll be a fun game to watch. But if you're the 49ers, you don't want games like these because you're not going to win them all. And it's basically a coin flip at that point.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So let's move on to
the next game. We'll get to coin flips later.
Oh, God. The next game of this weekend is a huge win for me and my fellow Momentum Doesn't Exist truthers. I'm talking about the Bucs versus the Rams.
And for every football fan that's not in Tampa Bay or New England.
For sure. A huge win for the Tom Brady haters. I think we can start with something that we've been warning about for a really long time. You and I have been talking about this going all the way back to last season's playoffs and honestly last season's regular season. And this is how this Bucs offense has sort of been a house of cards for the past 2 years. And it hasn't come back to bite them until literally this past week. And sort of against the Eagles, but the Eagles just didn't have enough on offense to be able to do anything. And what I'm talking about is their offensive line. This past week, they had Tristan Wirfs out, and Ryan Jensen was clearly injured and sort of hobbled during that game. And then Donovan Smith also got burned on a couple occasions. But the Buccaneers' offensive line was just absolutely cooked by the Rams' defensive front. And their defensive front is obviously good. They added Von Miller midseason. They have Aaron Donald. Leonard Floyd is also good. But it was just a massacre. And we have said for a while that if the Bucs offensive line gets injured at one or two key spots, Tom Brady's screwed because he just doesn't have the mobility to get out of like cluttered pockets like that anymore. And he's so, so much worse under pressure that if those guys went down, it was all going to crumble. And that's basically what happened. The Bucs have been extremely lucky to not only have had one of the best offensive lines in the league over the past 2 years, but also have had one of the healthiest offensive lines in the league. And that just didn't happen this past week. And I think that's really the story of this game.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Tom Brady looked uncomfortable. He obviously, like, if you're a Bucs fan, you might have been like at least a little bit encouraged by the fact that he was still standing at the end of the game and honestly almost brought them back in. But I mean, come on. He was not a good quarterback by any means in that game. Sure, he had those little Tom Brady spurts that are literally like natural to him. They aren't like impressive at this point. I'm like, cool, you came back from 28-3, like definitely, like whatever. No one even cares about that. No one even remembers that.
This definitely only would have been the second biggest comeback. No one's thinking about that.
I was so upset that it was 27-3 because it will always be known if they came back from this game, it was always be known as the second greatest comeback. Oh, what was the first greatest? Obviously, be the 28-3. But yeah, he had 54 pass attempts in that game, completed 30, which was a fair amount. But at the same time, 24 missed passes is a lot of, like, that's a lot of downs. And that came to bite them at the end of the game. They had a rough start to this one with only 3 points in the first half. It was not looking good. And it wasn't honestly looking good until the very, very end of the game. And even still, the Rams kept their whatever composure they had, despite Eric Weddle's complete ineptness on defense. And they managed to get one last drive together and kick that clutch field goal.
That's the thing. The reason that the Bucs were able to get back into this game was for basically two factors. One of them, not that controllable. Just terrible fumble luck. Two Cam Akers fumbles, one Cooper Kupp fumble. What are you going to do? Obviously, you wish they secured the ball a little bit better.
They got to script it somehow, you know.
For yeah, Brady. Right. So that happened. Not a ton you can change about that. Not a lot to project moving forward about that. The one thing that did change and was should be concerning for Rams fans moving forward was that once the Rams got that big lead, Sean McVay just turtled. And you can't do that when Matthew Stafford is absolutely playing his ass off the way he has been for this entire postseason.
Oh, for sure.
During the playoffs, Matthew Stafford's EPA per play has been 0.467, which, for the record, Josh Allen is at 0.645, which is absurd, just insane. And his completion percentage, Matthew Stafford's completion percentage, has been 12.5% better than expected. Basically, just to sum up what those numbers mean, he has been crazy good. And when Sean McVay takes the ball out of his hands and runs the ball, I think it was 11 out of 13 times towards the end of the game. That's doing the opposite of everything that brought you to this point. That's on you. When you're trying to pound the rock against what is one of the best run-stuffing teams in the league, you shouldn't be surprised when this happens.
Yeah, and honestly, when you have that good of a receiving core that can literally just run slants through you all day, it doesn't really make much sense. And Matthew Stafford can get it to them. There's a time and a place to run the ball. If you have a team that doesn't have a great quarterback, you got a Jimmy Garoppolo at the helm, can't really trust him to make those throws. If maybe you don't have the best receivers that can't get open easily, maybe you run the ball. But none of this is the case. The Rams have Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., Van Jefferson extremely fast. You have options. You have ways to go with the ball that aren't running. And Sean McVay did what we all do on Madden to try and kill as much time as possible. And then on 3rd and 9, just throw a crossing route. And that's just not going to – that's exactly what Tom Brady wants you to do. So they did let them get back into this game, but I'm glad they at least had one more drive left in them.
Just one small stat for you, which just emphasizes everything we've been talking about. Cam Akers ran the ball. Even despite fumbling twice, which, again, I wouldn't worry too much about it moving forward. They're going to need Cam Akers if they want to win the Super Bowl. But he ran the ball 24 times for 2 yards a carry. What are you doing, man? Come on, just leave the ball in Stafford's hands.
Yeah.
I don't think we want to speculate a ton about whether Tom Brady's coming back. But I'll say that if he does, assuming that he does, as long as the Bucs re-sign Chris Godwin, they're going to be fine next year with the exact same caveat that it requires their offensive line to stay healthy. It's the exact same thing that's been going on for the last 2 years.
I don't see any reason that Tom Brady retires here, especially with such a good offensive line. I think if he has protection, he'll play football. If he doesn't have protection, he'll go to a retirement home where he belongs. I see a very successful CTE-filled future for Tom Brady.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Okay. Moving on to the next game, which is one of the greatest games of all time, Kansas City versus Buffalo. 4 lead changes in the last 2 minutes of the game, and then overtime, I guess. Let's just start with our Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes takeaways. We can start there and go to the rest of the game, because there's other things I want to talk about. But
and can we also just say that no one won this game, and no one lost this game. Or sure, they both won this game. The only people that lost this game were NFL fans, because before we get into Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, let's talk about how that game ended, because it's blasphemy.
There's nothing to say. Like, I know, like, everyone knows at this point that the NFL overtime rules are horrible and everyone wants them to change. I honestly don't know if they will, but as the league shifts into a more quarterback and offense centric league, there are very reasonable arguments to shift the balance of the game back towards the defense, make some rule changes in that way. But this is not one of them. Like, this is not helping anyone.
Yeah, I know. You said everything. It's a shame that it's the only people that don't realize this are the ones making the decisions. I do love how quiet Chiefs fans have been, and they've been donating a lot to Josh Allen's foundation, which has been kind of cool. But it was just a horrible way to end such a great game.
I agree. But let's just get into the great parts of that game, which starts with the quarterbacks. Where the main thing I was thinking about after this game is that if Josh Allen can play near the level that he displayed in these past couple weeks consistently, and I say that because we are only a few weeks out from where he nearly lost to the Falcons and Jets in back-to-back weeks because he played so bad. Their defense really bailed him out in those games. The AFC is probably going to be a two-team competition for the next 10 years. And if it's not a two-team competition between the Bills and Kansas City, then you have Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and, I mean, maybe Joe Burrow, depends on what you think his ceiling is, that are just waiting in the wings. Like, if you don't
still have hesitant on Joe Burrow.
Oh, I will remain hesitant just because I don't think the upside is there. Well, actually, I want to talk about that when we get to the Bengals-Kansas City game, but I'll explain that one in 1 second. This game has made me even more certain that the Dolphins need to move on from Tua. I know I come back to this a lot, but this is more just like a general theme for all the teams with quarterbacks who are mid, who are like Kirk Cousins level, who are Baker Mayfield level. Baker Mayfield on a good day, not Baker Mayfield this past season.
You just put Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield on the same level.
They're the same quarterback. like, Tua doesn't have this level of play in him. Neither does Baker. Neither does Kirk Cousins. Neither does Ryan Tannehill, probably. Like, there's just a bunch of
quarterbacks. You can keep going for a long time.
Yeah, there's this whole middle class of quarterbacks who don't have this level of play in them. And no matter how good their team is around them, unless, like, Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert is missing their entire offensive line the way Mahomes was in the Super Bowl last year, I don't see them losing to one of these, like, mid-tier quarterbacks. And, that's just basically it. That's the future of the NFL.
I think at our betting, our sports betting podcast that we had a little while ago, I had the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. And I did that in real life, too. I put $20 on the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl at the time.
What I'm hearing is that Adam is not an objective journalist. Not an objective journalist. No. I don't think we've ever pretended to be, for the record.
Absolutely not. Let's get this straight. We hate objective journalists. Anyways.
No such thing.
There isn't. It's two of the greatest teams I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I've watched, like, football for years. I've seen some of the best Tom Brady teams. I've seen the best Aaron Rodgers teams. They don't compare to this level of electricity. Because what these two quarterbacks have is something that quarterbacks have never had before, which is the being a pass-first quarterback while having the ability to run the ball like anyone else. They both led their teams in rushing yards this game. When was the last time you saw, like, this level of passing quarterback also lead their teams in rushing? And we didn't see that. Like, we see quarterbacks who are good at either, but this bridge is something never seen before.
What you're referencing right now, their movement abilities, is so interesting to me because it's not just the running that they've done downfield, the scrambles that they've broken off. That's great. For Josh Allen, it's probably a little bit more important than it is for Mahomes, but he definitely did help Kansas City in this game with his legs. The movement that I'm thinking of is behind the line of scrimmage. He's both inside and outside of the pocket. Their footwork was outrageous in this game. Because what's interesting is that both defensive lines, especially during the beginning of the game, they got a little bit tired towards the end, were getting decent amounts of pressure, but they just had no ability to create negative plays by bringing Mahomes or Allen down for two different reasons. Josh Allen is just too big for one, like, single man to tackle, which is just so funny to watch them all bounce off of him. And Patrick Mahomes is just slippery enough that every time it looked like the Bills were going to bring him down, he escaped and bought himself like 2 seconds as he ran to the sideline and normally did something with that. That, in combination with, I mean, I don't know if arm talent is a strong enough word to describe what we're seeing from them, because there's two different throws that I'm thinking of, one from each of them. Everyone saw the Josh Allen 75-yard touchdown to Gabriel Davis. That went straight over Juan Thornhill's head when he was playing deep in cover two. Shouldn't be possible. Just shouldn't be possible. And then the other one, I think you'll probably know what I'm talking about, but in like the second quarter, so everyone forgot it because everything happened later in the game, Patrick Mahomes made, I think, like a submarine throw is the best way to explain it, because sidearm doesn't explain what we saw. And he did that for like 11 yards to Kelsey. And that was like one of the like outside the top 10 most absurd things that happened in that game. But I've never seen that before.
No, I mean, looking at Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball, I just think of that Leonardo da Vinci like picture of the man and his arms in every possible position. And he can throw it from any one of those. He can throw it from any one of those angles. Patrick Mahomes is, we don't talk about his agileness enough, but his ability to be able to like contort his body to throw it from any angle, it just adds to his already insane list of attributes. These two quarterbacks, like, I think I'm the only person that saw this coming out of Josh Allen out of college. But
taking a lot of credit there. For,
I'm kidding. Like, not in my wild. I was obviously high on Josh Allen. Not in my wildest dreams I see him getting to this level. Or I don't even think Josh Allen's his mom saw him getting to this level. This is some ridiculous voodoo like quarterbacking. And if we get to see, we are so fortunate that these guys are young. Because we're going to get to see this for years to come, hopefully, barring any injuries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's two players that I want to talk about in the context of this game. One who's sort of obvious, and then one I think who's a little bit less, but is actually, I think, just as important as the first. So I'll start with the obvious one, which is Tyreek Hill, who there's two things I was thinking of. One, I was going back and I was watching the highlights of this game, and something that's absurd about Tyreek Hill, and I don't think you see this from really anyone else in the league, is that his lower body moves independently of his upper body when he's catching the ball. I mean, everyone has seen Tyreek Hill do that like little back pedal thing to create a few yards of space, but whenever he catches like one of the short out routes or whatever. But it's so incredible to watch because his eyes are on the ball, but even as he's catching it, he's already starting his back pedal. And then when you add that to his just angle erasing speed that he showcased as possibly the most dangerous weapon in the entire NFL on that 60-yard score, it's just impossible to tackle him because he scored on that one, on that play at the end of the fourth, at the end of the fourth quarter, when the Bills were preventing any big plays by playing two man and the corner had, who was covering him, I think it was Levi Wallace, had inside leverage. He scored on a crossing route. That shouldn't be possible. Like that just doesn't make sense because that entire defensive play call is meant to prevent exactly that play. And he's just so fast that he made Jordan Poyer, who's an all pro safety, miss him by like 3 yards. I can't explain how insane that is.
Yeah. I mean, you said that shouldn't be possible twice now. I think that could be the title of this game. Everything that happened, that shouldn't be possible. Gabriel Davis, 200-yard game, 4 touchdowns, ended up losing. Like, when that shouldn't be possible. It was a crazy, crazy game that we got to watch. And back to the topic, you mentioned he runs like the Roadrunner. Like, his entire he's completely stiff, and then his legs are just blurring by under him, and you just hear like meep meep, and he's gone. It's so much like, and that's why him and Patrick Mahomes go so well together, because he can find a open spot on the field. When you're that fast, there's no way a defense can cover you in after the first play is up. Like, sure, you can get bracketed, and they can get lucky and guess exactly where you're going, but as soon as Patrick Mahomes by 20 seconds by running slowly around the back of the field, twisting the other way, going all the way back around, he's open. Like, there's no way you can stop that. Him or Tyreek or Travis Kelce is open, or Jerick McKinnon, or you see Byron Pringle down the field. Like, there's nothing you can do to stop that. And honestly, the Bills did not even play that bad defensively for what they could do. Like, they guessed a lot of the plays right. They were in the right places. I thought Tremaine Edmonds actually had a very well-positioned game. He was there. Like,
I would disagree with that one, but that's okay.
If I'm saying for what you could do for in that situation, he played his role better than a lot of the players on the Bills defense. And it was a tough game, obviously, against a tough opponent. And I think we're going to see a lot of high-scoring Bills-Chiefs games in future playoffs.
Definitely not a great matchup for a bad player like Tremaine Edmonds when you're going up against like Travis Kelce. But I was watching some of that game or some of the highlights of that game, and there were just 4 plays in a row where Kansas City threw straight at him and he couldn't stop any of them. But that's something else. The other player
he was always there though.
He was there. He just wasn't doing anything. The other player who I wanted to talk about was Melvin Ingram. It is crazy to me that Kansas City's 6th-round pick may have won them the Super Bowl. I mean, obviously, none of this is over. Plenty of things can change. But that is what Kansas City gave up to get Melvin Ingram from the Steelers at midseason. And that had a massive domino effect, because not only is Melvin Ingram really good, even though he's well past his prime and it's a little bit of a surprise that he's been this good, by adding Ingram, Kansas City was able to move Chris Jones back into the inside of the defensive line. They were using him as an edge rusher for a lot of the beginning of the season, where he was not nearly as productive, and he's been significantly more efficient since then. But in this game, Melvin Ingram hit Spencer Brown with one of the most vicious hump moves I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, there were grounds for the cops to just go onto the field and arrest him for that in that moment. He was torturing Brown the entire game, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah, Spencer Brown, obviously, we talked a lot about him as a rookie coming in this year, has so much responsibility on that line, but he got completely taken to class today. He went right back to his D3 college. It was, he wasn't the one at D3, was he?
No, that was Quinn Meinertz.
Spencer Brown, was he Iowa? It doesn't
matter. No, NIU, but yeah.
NIU. It's a very tough job to be thrown into. And that just even shows more, like, Patrick Mahomes' offensive line is good. It's very good. We talked about it this offseason. They got a great center in Creed Humphrey. That line is strong. Josh Allen, you don't look at that line and go, that's a good offensive line. It's like a decent above average offensive line.
Yeah.
Right. So the fact that he's able to make so much time and insane, like, movements while being on under pressure on fourth and 11s, it's like no one can do that. That's not sane. That shouldn't be possible. Back to the name of this game. I think we're starting to understand what the title might be of this episode. It was what a performance by the quarterbacks. And Melvin Ingram made him move around. And I think, honestly, was that a net positive? Because when Josh Allen got out of the pocket, he was kind of unbeatable.
So that's a good point, actually. But even going beyond this game, I think we can think about Melvin Ingram as an even bigger piece in this upcoming game, because the Bengals' offensive line got destroyed, but their biggest weakness, or against the Titans, but their biggest weakness for basically the entire second half of the season has been the right side of their offensive line, because they lost Riley Reiff to injury near the end of the season. So Melvin Ingram is going to play a huge role in this game, because I think their right tackle's name is Isaiah Prince now or something like that, the Bengals. Isaiah Prince can't stop Melvin Ingram. And if he does what he did against the Bills, I don't think I don't think Joe Burrow, who is very good, can do what Josh Allen did.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good segue. I think we should move into our previews for next week.
Let's do it.
Let's start with this game. Bengals Chiefs. How do you see that game going?
The Bengals are really good. They're a very good team. They're a really fun story. But Patrick Mahomes at Kansas City is just running on all cylinders. Oh, that butt was definitely coming. Because we all know that the Bengals beat Kansas City in week 17 in what was a really fun game, a high-scoring game. But for that to happen, they needed Ja'Marr Chase to have like over 200 receiving yards, I think. He had some crazy contested catches. He had a few broken plays that he scored on. I think that if Kansas City can just bottle up those like 30-yard plays, that's all they really need. Like, the Bengals just don't have enough in them to keep up without those kinds of plays. And especially given how weak their offensive line looked last week, I don't see them winning this game. I don't even think it's all that close. I used to think it was close, like coming into these past couple of days before I started thinking about it more closely. Now I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's as much as I like Joe Burrow, and I think that he does have upside, I think he does have a long way to go. It's too much of a task for any quarterback that's not Josh Allen right now, in my opinion. Maybe Justin Herbert, right now, I think that they're in their own level. I think the Chiefs, barring something incredible, are currently on pace to being Super Bowl champions, and I'd be very surprised if they didn't end up winning.
We talked earlier in the episode about how Jesse Bates is really taking his game to another level, or really, like, I would say the level they hoped to get from him during the postseason. And the other player who I was thinking of when we talked about that was Travis Kelce, who during this regular season, he just looked slower than he has in the past. He had a lot more trouble getting off of press coverage. And in this past game, when they played in week 17, he only had 5 catches for 25 yards. He has played significantly better, way faster, way more physically during the postseason. And I don't think the Bengals can hold him to that again. So I just don't see any way that the Cincinnati Bengals get the stops that they need, unless like Patrick Mahomes throws some crazy interception or maybe they fumble a few times. I just don't expect that to happen. I mean, like, that's just very slim chance.
This is playoff Patty. We've never seen him have a bad playoff game in his career. Even when he was a rookie going up against the Patriots, not having the best success early, he played out of his mind. It's a different beast. The Chiefs in the playoffs are a different team than regular season Chiefs. If the postseason Chiefs played regular season football, they'd go undefeated. I guess depending on the coin flip against the Bills. I don't see any way that Joe Burr and the Bengals had any chance against the Chiefs.
And then the final spot where the Bengals are at a disadvantage is coaching. Because even though Andy Reid isn't the best game manager, he's really stayed pretty consistent with that his entire career. I am so much more confident in him coming in with a great game plan, him and Eric Bieniemy, than Mr. Five-Man Protection, Zach Taylor. I don't really know what Zach Taylor contributes to this team. I really think it's just only Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase keeping them afloat. T. Higgins,
and you know Zach Taylor is going to be the coach for a long time.
I know, because they don't fire their coaches. Like Marvin Lewis had like 15 years in Cincinnati, and Zach Taylor is going to ride Joe Burrow's coattails until Burrow retires. And honestly, it's going to be a shame. But I think we're in agreement about this game. Even though the Bengals have had a really fun run, they're just not up to the caliber. They don't have the stars that can keep up with Kansas City. And I think both of us are leaning pretty heavily towards Patrick Mahomes in this game.
Yeah, I don't see many. Like, I'm looking at 6 million outcomes, and I see only a couple where the Bengals end up winning this one.
Thank you, Dr. Strange.
Got now, you.
See if you can tell me what happens in this next game, which I think is actually really, really, really close. And I think we actually are going to disagree on this one. So what do you think is going to happen in the Rams 49ers NFC Championship game?
So I actually bet against the 49ers against the Packers. But luckily the guy was nice enough to allow for a double or nothing against the Rams. So I doubled down. The 49ers are a great defensive team. They show a lot of stoicness, a lot of power on their defense. They hold teams to a lot fewer opportunities, not even like big plays, just fewer opportunities. They make like routes disappear. They make things go away. So I think the 49ers will do a great job, like completely screening out some big Cooper Kupp passes. They'll definitely have a scheme for the Los Angeles Rams, because I think the Rams offense, as it looks really good, is pretty like pretty simplistic. The whole Cam Akers, Cooper Kupp, Matt Stafford offense is not like the hardest thing to defend, but I'm just terrified of that 49ers offense getting absolutely annihilated by the Rams defense.
I agree with that, but here's what I'll say. Matthew Stafford is significantly better than Jimmy Garoppolo. No one would deny that.
Yeah.
But the areas that the Rams are the weakest, especially on defense, where for them it's like the run game, because they've decided that they want to stop and pass more than the run, which makes sense in the modern NFL against anyone except for the 49ers, really. And also the middle of the field, because they decided that their linebackers aren't as valuable, also following modern football theory, makes sense. But that's exactly where Kyle Shanahan wants to be going with the ball. So I expect in this game for Deebo Samuel to have a much bigger game running the ball than he probably will receiving. I don't know if Jalen Ramsey is going to shadow him, but if he does, he's one of the few corners in the league that's big enough and physical enough and also fast enough to cover him. But they were talking about something on the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny this week. I thought it was really interesting how Raheem Morris may decide that he needs Jalen Ramsey, because Jalen Ramsey is so big. He's a really good run defender. They might decide that they need him to add into the run fits and playing primarily in the slot so that he's near the box. I think that might be interesting. We might not see him covering Deebo Samuel all that often. Either way, I don't think that they have the answers to what Kyle Shanahan wants to do on offense. And obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo could blow all this up, like you're saying. Like, it might not matter. But I am going to bet in this game on Kyle Shanahan outcoaching Sean McVay, because he is 6-0. Kyle Shanahan is 6-0 against Sean McVay. Ben Solak wrote a great article for The Ringer this week. I highly recommend all you guys check it out, about the differences between their scheme and how they started from the same place and really evolved to have their own different schemes. And he basically just shows how Kyle Shanahan is a better coach than Sean McVay in a lot of different ways. And Sean McVay is still a good coach, just Kyle Shanahan is an offensive innovator in a different way. I am betting on the coaching matchup in this game, and I actually think the 49ers are going to win.
Okay. I mean, I'm down to put a dollar on it if you want to add to the $1 bet.
Sure, I think I'm already down. But on the other side of the ball, I think that the 49ers bottle up the Rams run game again. And so that's going to make them pretty one-dimensional. The 49ers were able to shut down the Rams run game in week 18. In that game that they ended up winning, they shut down the Packers run game. And so I think that if Nick Bosa and company can get to Matthew Stafford, even though he's been playing so well in these playoffs, we know that Matthew Stafford is a pretty volatile quarterback. Like one or two boneheaded plays could give the 49ers great field position and really give them a chance to win this game. So that's basically what I'm betting on. And obviously, you can just bet on the Rams having better players. I think it'd be a completely reasonable bet. In this game, I think it might be the X's and O's that decide it.
Yeah, I agree. I think Shanahan will outcoach Sean McVay, but I do think that the Rams will win this game solely on the Jimmy Garoppolo factor. I just don't see – I don't know where they get their points from. I'm looking at this team and, like, sure, Deebo Samuel can run the ball, but as soon as that's the only way you're getting yards, he won't be able to run the ball anymore. And it's where else are you going? Because you can't, you're not going to beat anyone deep with Jimmy Garoppolo's arm. You're not going to beat anyone across the middle with Jimmy Garoppolo's accuracy. You're not going to beat anyone in the short passes with Jimmy Garoppolo's play awareness. It was sure he's not. I am a little bit over exaggerating his awfulness, but I don't see any world in which the 49ers put up more points than the Rams in this game.
I'm saying it's the same world where they put up more points than the Rams like 3 weeks ago. So there is precedent for it. Obviously, it's going to be a really close game. And I think this one's going to be a defensive slugfest. Both these teams' defenses are playing at a really high level right now. And if I'm wrong and it becomes a shootout, yeah, I would absolutely want the Rams in that case.
And who's the favorite in that game?
So right now, the Rams are favored by 3.5, but they're the home team. So that's pretty close to a coin flip. And I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for this game. I think that both these games are going to be really fun to watch, whether or not they're close, which I could reasonably see both these games not being all that close. But I've also had a blast breaking down these games and this past weekend's games on this episode.
Yeah, we are very lucky to be able to have seen what we've already seen. And honestly, if the rest of the games are terrible, at least we got that round of football to look back on. If you have any video of that Bills Chiefs game, keep it, sell it as an NFT in 20 years. It's something we'll never forget. We're very lucky to be able to see that live, and hopefully we get something even close to that caliber for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that right now we are hurtling towards the 2019 or 2020 Super Bowl all over again, where we have Kansas City against San Francisco. And I see a very similar game where San Francisco's defense runs the game for the first half and then Patrick Mahomes just wakes up in the second half. But even if we do, that game was really fun. So yeah. I'm glad that we get to watch all these great quarterbacks, all these great teams just duke it out.
And don't forget about February 6th, where you get to see the AFC go up against the NFC in a game of dodgeball.
I can't wait for the Pro Bowl too. That'll do it for this episode. I'm not sure if we'll be back next week, but we will have an episode at the very least at the end of the season to recap the Super Bowl and the rest of the playoffs. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. If there's anything else you want us to do or talk about, just let us know. And we will see you guys next time.